IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal. And this week, we explore the department that makes the cars crash, the buildings disappear, and the explosions colossal. We're excited to welcome the man behind the special effects in credits such as Chronicles of Riddick, Robson Arms, American Dreams, and Riverdale.
Taking the Apple Box this week is Chris Sturges. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, Chris. Hi. Thanks for coming in today.
So let's talk pyro. I think that's who, yeah.
I wasn't there. I didn't do it.
Right. So you have a love of blowing things up, obviously. Mm-hmm. Is that how you got hooked into the film and television industry?
One of the ways. I did start in pyrotechnics with what used to be called the Symphony of Fire. I did that for a couple of years, and then I did it as a profession for three more years, and then there was no more work.
No more work. So this was on traveling shows and events and things?
Events, the Grizzlies, the Canucks, the Villarreal launch, any of the annual shows or even just commercial shows that you see happening. And we would set those up and fire those. But there wasn't a lot of work. There was enough work for three or four people in the province.
Wow. So it's an elite group that started that. So the transition over to film and television, how did that happen?
Well, I recognized that I had a lot of skills that would apply to special effects. I was already a general contractor. I had done electronics. I'd done all manner of repairs and contracting. One of the things that special effects looks for is a wide variety of experience. So I said, hey, that's going to work. And so I signed up for the local as a permittee and waited. The business was this was in the mid 90s. It wasn't as busy as it is now. So you could easily go several months or longer waiting for a phone call. I think I went a year before I got my first phone call. It was very, very different back then.
Do you remember what your first show was?
I believe it was Stargate season one, or pilot or season one. I was shaking snow on Amanda Tapping. That was, but I spent a bit of time there, and that was a lot of fun. That was a really good learning experience.
One of the classic BC shows. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of work, as we said in the open here. Chronicles of Riddick was just massive. We have a whole generation of film and television workers that refer to Riddick as their genesis.
That was a wonderful show. It was entertaining to be on, and it was a luxury because I ended up doing 4 months in construction on the show because I'm also a member of construction. And I then flipped and went into special effects and did 4 months working on the show, shooting on the sets that I'd built.
That's amazing.
That was amazing. It was so much fun.
Do you remember the first time you actually saw something you worked on television or on the big screen and were like, I did that?
Well, the very first time actually was well before film.
Oh, really?
As I mentioned, I did a lot of things, including working in theater, and I was the lighting guy for a fashion show, and it was a broadcast fashion show, and the guys were getting me to run all these errands, and then they called me into the broadcast booth as they were rolling the credits, and they'd given me credit on the show, and that was my first one that I really remembered. I think Chronicles of Riddick was the first one where I got screen credit. As well.
That's great.
Can you tell us what the difference is? You mentioned doing display fireworks. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what the difference is between that skill and how you apply that skill to the film industry, to special effects specifically?
Well, they're technically two different tickets. The display fireworks are specifically, they're often called aerial fireworks because they're the ones that are launched out of a tube into the air. And they're all of like the waterfalls, all of the classic display fireworks that you would see at Symphony of Fire. The water bursts, all of those type of fireworks are under display fireworks. what we do in special effects is we're actually fabricating pyrotechnic effects for the use, specific use of the film as directed. That's a separate ticket that requires different experience and a lot more of it because you're creating the exact effects you need. You generally using pre-built pieces, but we will create our own pyrotechnic effects from scratch as well if we need to.
Mm-hmm. So what are the basic sort of skills that someone needs to get into your department?
All of them. I mentioned you're generally expected to have at least three different trades, three different unrelated trades. And the idea is that you should be able to work with any tool that you're given to do any job that you need to do, often without any experience at all, or often any guidance. So you're expected to be able to pick up anything. Like I was handed, I was told, go look in that drawer and take all the interior upholstery out of that car. And the tools are in that drawer. So I picked up the tools and I went and started popping up, taking the car apart. I didn't have a lot of experience. I'd never done body work on a car. And I didn't have a lot of experience with car other than fixing the ones that I had to drive. So it was a brand new skill. And I walked in and picked it up, figured it out. And I was off and running in about 5 minutes.
So when you're building your team, because you're a coordinator now, right?
Yeah, I'm an assistant coordinator at the moment, but I have coordinated many times. Yes.
When you're building your team, do you look for that diversity of abilities? Is that a real key, or do you just?
I expect that.
Oh, okay.
I believe that every member that walks in should have those skill, the entire skill set. Right. When we're trying to coordinate, we expect that at the outset, and then we start working around the people that don't have it.
Okay.
And often the people that don't have it become the weak links in our team that we need to work around.
Your career spans quite a few years. So from Chronicles of Riddick to Riverdale, have there been any massive changes within your department technologically that you've had to sort of find creative ways to adapt to?
Well, we touched briefly in when we talked before this about the technical changes, the regulatory changes that are making our lives difficult. Fortunately, we have the production has our back on that. Most of the changes that have occurred are to our benefit. We have 3D printers, we have CAD/CAM, we have all this equipment, CNC machines. I don't have a shop like other people in the department do, but we can basically build anything that you can imagine out of any material you can imagine.
Let's get into talking about how do you make a car accident happen safely?
It depends on what you need to do. It can be very, very easy. It can be very difficult. It depends on whether you have the actor driving, a stunt driver driving. Is this a slow speed accident? We did one, I believe it was the spinoff from X-Files, and we had to have a car drive into was run off the road and into the post of an overpass. And we prepared the car so it was safe. We had the actor in it, and then we pulled it using a tow truck and a 2-to-1 block. And we successfully pulled it into the overpass so successfully that it moved the block and the block contacted the overpass and they had to shut the overpass down. And then they examined it and the engineers looked at it and said, okay, we're fine. You guys can keep going.
Basically, you have to be able to approach every single task, look at the objective, figure out all of the safety mechanisms in place, put fault protection everywhere you can. So
absolutely.
That you minimize the risk and achieve what is desired on the camera, right?
Absolutely. It's all about doing the stunt as safely as possible, but making it look real and getting this all in front of camera.
So what's on the camera, what's on the shot is the tip of the iceberg, right?
Absolutely.
So there's so much behind it that nobody sees.
There's so much safety that people don't understand. If we're going to do any stunt with the car, you forget, we got to take the gas tank out. Like if the car doesn't have to drive, we can take the gas tank, the radiator, we're going to take all the dangerous parts out of the car. If the car does have to drive, but is doing, for example, a rollover, which would be a stunt driver and a rail or a ramp, then we're going to put in a fuel cell, which is a racing car gas tank, which holds about a liter of gas and is a foam cell inside it. And that will prevent potentially any disastrous consequences. Sometimes if we're going to burn a car, we have to go as far as taking out the shocks and struts, the radiator, letting the air out of the tires, taking all the toxic combustibles out of the car, taking the battery out, anything that could contain pressure, all has to be removed from the car. It can take a long time.
Yeah, and you keep mentioning stunts. So there's a lot of interdepartmental communication, obviously.
Absolutely.
Between special effects and every department. But what is that skill set that you need to be able to actually understand?
Well, understanding the other departments is very helpful, but being able to communicate well and to go to the other department and say, hey, can I get your hand? I need this to happen. Very often in the recent, on Riverdale, we've needed to hook up rain and various things like that inside. And so we work with construction, we work with grips, we work with electrics, we work with everybody to make sure it's done as safe as possible.
Can you think of one of the most memorable sort of films from your childhood?
I watched, For Your Eyes Only. And that was memorable. Primarily, my father was with me and he mentioned that he used to receive those files that were labeled For Your Eyes Only. He was a training officer on an aircraft carrier.
Wow.
And that made it additionally special.
And you mentioned in your pre-interview, John Landis.
Absolutely. I worked with John Landis on Masters of Horror. Masters of Horror was wonderful. It was a really neat, unique working experience. But I wanted to talk to John about the Blues Brothers movies because those are absolutely fabulous. And I would love to chat with him about working with Dan Aykroyd and creating with Dan Aykroyd. I never got a chance to because we were too busy working the entire time.
So you're a fan as well.
Absolutely.
What do you watch now? What are you watching now?
I don't actually have any time to watch anything.
It's an occupational hazard, right?
When you're working 60 hours a week or more, and then you have other things to do on the side. I have about an hour. I'm at this point I'm off, but I generally have about an hour when I get home to do a task and then I'm going to bed.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have another passion though. It's the science fiction and fantasy convention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I think it's wonderful. So the Vancouver Science Fiction Convention, Science Fiction and Fantasy, VCon, has been going in Vancouver for 50 years.
Wow.
And we work with professionals because we're creating content that is created very often is created here in town. Vancouver's known as the center to get science fiction shot. It's been that way for a couple of decades now, I think, at least one. And so we have all the skill and talent, and our focus with VCon this year especially is to emphasize the ways that you can make your story come to life. And it could be a video game, a board game, or most people think of film and TV.
And your perspective must be cherished by the group there. I mean, you're the insider.
Right? I'm not only the insider, but because I coordinate and I'm familiar with the idea of coordinating a film production, I'm trained in the top-down view. Right. And what I'm doing specifically, this year is our 50th anniversary. We're reconstructing the entire convention around the pivot into the next century.
And as COVID's touched all of us, but I'm sure that's caused all sorts of wrinkles that you must impacts your work.
Oh, it's amazing. I was very fortunate to be working on Riverdale this season. Warner Brothers felt that this was one of their flagship projects, and so they put all the resources in to making sure that we didn't go down again. We did have a number of COVID positive tests. Everybody was being tested at least every week, sometimes every couple of days. And the COVID, everything was isolated in such a way that we were able to sustain a positive result without the production going down.
So but the attention to safety, and it goes down to every single crew member has that obligation.
Yes.
And especially so when you're approaching things from a special effects point of view. But it's one of those things that connects the film industry and the reason why we were able to roar back because we all have that personal obligation.
It's not just that obligation. As chair of the Department of Special Effects, I did some analysis of a number of the accidents that have happened in North America. And I looked at what I tried to find the common denominator. And the common denominator was always that everybody saw the factors leading up to an accident and didn't think they were important enough to report or bring up to the food chain. Every single accident was preventable in three or four different ways. And they all would have been prevented if we'd just spoken up. And that's one of the things that I talk about to my crew is if you see something, speak up. It's never trivial. Nobody else is going to notice it. Speak up and we can prevent the accidents.
It sounds like mentorship plays a role there as well, because you have people that aren't that experienced and you've got to get them onto the same page.
Absolutely. It's the one way that you can keep your core crew tight. They know that you care about them. You can support them by teaching additional skills. And very often, it's more beneficial to have a green crew that you can teach and bring up. When I started on Riverdale, I started as a day call. And we had a lot of guys that had a lot less experience than I did. And I walked past one of them. And so I was getting a lot of flack as being the old guy, and nobody knew who I was. And I walked past one of the smokers and I said, "Your smoker's too hot." And they said, "Well, what do you mean my smoker's too hot?" I said, "You got to turn it down. Turn it all the way down." They said, "How can you tell?" I said, "You can smell it." And they looked at me and they said, "My God, how long have you been doing this?"
What is the most expensive gag that you've ever put together?
Anytime we're blowing up a house. The really expensive gags are not ones that I've usually worked on because I try to keep them down. I try to work on shows that are a little less stressful. I've heard of stories where they ended up blowing up a building with a brand new Mack truck in it because they didn't have time to get the truck out for the gag. I believe a lot of the gags that we did for Windchill were expensive just due to the nature of the circuit of where we were, the fact that it was minus 30 to minus 50.
Yeah, minus 47, that changes everything.
That right? Freezes propane.
Right.
So propane does not flow. The gas is not created at minus 47. So we actually had to have the propane tank on top of the heater just so the heater could work.
Wow, that seems a little nerve-wracking.
No, it's completely safe. This is we talked about propane safety a little bit before this. The if you understand how propane works, it's completely safe. It was actually fun. I started in special effects. And then in the early 2000s, I went down to Burning Man. And it was Burning Man that taught me the technical safety aspects of propane. Because in special effects, we learn things by rote. We didn't necessarily go to school. And I got schooled at Burning Man, of all places.
So what did you actually do at Burning Man? Like what skill did you get from Burning Man that transferred into...
The technical aspect of propane, how it behaved, the different pressures that it operated at, also the nature. At that time, we were so in the industry, we were so used to handling it that we were doing things we didn't know why. We didn't know the density of propane. So approximately 6% propane to oxygen or to air is one of the happy areas where you're going to get a blue flame. It's also the perfect area for a fuel air explosion. So those are things. If you've got liquid propane, for example, when it's minus 47 or slightly colder, propane will flow as a liquid and you can set it on fire and it burns a little bit like diesel. Anything higher than that, it burns very differently and becomes explosive. In a fuel air mix, propane is about equivalent to 4 sticks of dynamite per liter of propane.
What's your favorite explosive?
I do like det cord.
What's det cord?
Detonating cord. It's an explosive used generally in mining and demolition. Working on the series 6, we put we used a lot of det cord because it was an army movie. You know, lots of SEAL type activity, and we wired a small structure with det cord.
And so, what effect does det cord give you?
It makes things go away. It happens so fast. It burns, I've forgotten, almost like a 60th of a second or less. It happens between frames. We did a detonation and we lost some pieces of the set. And we had to go back and rewind the footage and look for it and realize that it was blown out of frame in the first fraction of a second.
And it's not all explosives, because you mentioned a fogger, a smoker, right? Like you're creating environmental haze for the cinematography. You're doing glass work. You're doing...
Absolutely. As I tell the guys coming up, when I've brought in a lot of people into this department, 60% of our work is atmosphere. And that atmosphere is mostly smoke, but it can be wind, it can be rain, snow, anything atmospheric. That's a good 60% of our work. 30% of our work is additional stunts, practical effects, things like that. 10% of it is the fun stuff. And of that, less than 1% is actually blowing things up.
And how closely do you work with visual effects? Because they also kind of cross over into physical effects, right?
We should work very, very closely with them. Sometimes they say, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. Most of the time we work with them to try to show where, for example, we had to set a fire and that fire became a forest fire. That is obviously working closely with visual effects. The best effects occur when we can build plates and elements for visual effects, and then they expand them. That's the best visual. That's the most seamless effect on screen. We're always trying to get the best effect up on screen.
Can you explain to someone who might not know what a plate is?
A plate is simply clean shots or shots in certain cases with a visual effect in them. For Supernatural, I made a number of plates where we had just a red flare element against a green background. And when they recorded it, they cut out the green background and had a red flare element that they could insert anywhere in the video. In this case, it was the fellow was being shot with phosphorus rounds because that's the only way they could kill him.
So what do you think your department's motto would be?
We do the impossible by coffee. It's generally, that's our job, is to create impossible things. For Final Destination 3, we created a replica of the roller coaster, the P&E, and we built it in 10 days. Later, we did a reshoot where we wrecked a New York City subway train system, and we had 7 days to build that.
7 days to build a subway train station.
We built it. So construction built the train station. We brought in 3 subway cars from New York, legit full subway cars. And I showed up for work and I was handed one of the large gas powered abrasive saws and told that my work for that day was to cut that subway car in half.
So we've talked about mentorship. We've talked about building a team. What piece of advice would you give somebody looking to get into the industry who hasn't actually done any days on a film set?
If you haven't done any days on a, so if you're in special effects and you haven't done any days on a film set, it's make yourself available, be patient, and do what you're told. You're probably going to be put on a smoker for about your first 6 months. That's common. If you're still attentive, if you're paying attention the entire time, that's going to be invaluable. If you're listening on the radio, don't expect to jump in, but be prepared to jump in if you're asked.
So it sounds like it's pretty common that there's a lot of practical on-set learning.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no way you can learn special effects outside of the industry. There's minimal training courses available out there. You have to be able to learn. If you're a lifetime learner, that's going to be your skill that you can probably use the most. We actually have people in our crew right now that are taking courses as they go to build their skill set.
And do you still take courses?
I delegate people to take courses.
Have you taken advantage of IATSE's training funds that are available members?
Yeah, I have many years ago. I'm in a position now where I don't have the time. But you should always make time for training, but there is no training for the part that I'm going into now, which is more of the coordinating and producing side. You can't, there's no courses that apply to that.
Producing.
Yes.
Television, books, what?
Film and movie, TV and movies. I've got so many friends that are so creative, and we have such an amazing skill set that the production company just kind of happened. We have probably, I think we've got about 18 scripts in front of us right now, and one of them is ready to go. So we've, with the experience that I've got, it's relatively easy to shoot a movie at this point.
Yeah. I'm of the belief that almost everyone in 891 has a little bit of filmmaker in them. So thanks for sharing that.
You have to be able to, because everything you're shooting, whatever your department is, you're recognizing that it has to appear on camera. A lot of people don't understand necessarily that the very, very small subtleties are what contribute to the immersion of the viewer. And not only that, some of them are very good at telling a story, even with the editing. In the movie Lucy by Luc Besson, it's subtle, but you don't realize that he's telling another story by the way that he shot certain scenes. Certain scenes were shot for shot remakes of other classic movies. So part of that movie was an homage to other science fiction movies, including 2001, the H.G. Wells Time Machine, things like that. And the only reference to them was the fact that Matrix, they were shot for shot remakes. And they looked a little bit out of place when you watch the movie, and then you realize what they are. And he's shot a movie within a movie.
It's amazing. Well, I hope the producing really takes off so you can hire John Landis. And then he'll be forced to talk to you.
Well, I think I'd rather just meet him at a cocktail event and have a chat. See, that's the one thing we don't get enough of, is we don't get enough social time.
Especially now.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, that's been the most difficult part of working within COVID. Is not being able to be within 6 feet, not being able to hang out for more than 15 minutes, you know.
I believe that's getting close to wrapping up our Apple Box talks for another week. Thank you, Chris, for coming to join us and pulling up an Apple Box and just having a chat.
You're very welcome. It was fun.
It's been fascinating to hear about your experience and your career from minus 47 to liquid propane and everything in between. I guess that's it for another Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to get your career rolling in the film and television industry, check out ourwork.ca.